Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversation, special panel edition today, heading into WrestleMania 40, or WrestleMania XL, as some people are referring to it as. We're joined today by managing editor of Wrestling Junkie, Nick Tilwalk. Nick, welcome. As well as Wrestling Junkie columnist, Juan Johnson. So, I'm pretty excited for this year's WrestleMania. I will be there. This will be my third WrestleMania, having gone to WrestleManias 29 and 35, both at MetLife Stadium, this time a little different stadium. So the first thing I'm going to bring up before we get into any of the matches and the angles and all that stuff is something I've seen talked about quite a bit lately, and I'll start with Nick. Will this be first WrestleMania, with the exceptions, of course, being WrestleMania 2, which was at three locations when he couldn't be at all three of them, and when The Undertaker got knocked silly against Brock Lesnar and Vince went to the hospital and missed the end of WrestleMania, will this be the actual first WrestleMania without Vince McMahon physically there? What do you think?
Yes, I think so. Obviously, he can always show up. I don't think people will... I don't think WWE or TKO would stop him from coming into Lincoln Financial Field, but I think that... given everything that has been going on with him and continues to go on with him, I think that he will stay away. I think that TKO will probably suggest that he stays away. And I feel like TKO management has slowly kind of been distancing itself from him as much as possible, with Mark Shapiro even saying recently, like, we don't talk to him. He owns part of the company, but we don't talk to him. So I think, yes, this will be the first Vince-free WrestleMania.
I kind of wonder if he tries to show up anyway. He does own a portion of the company. I don't know what exactly the percentage is right now. I know it was 11 before he sold off the recent stocks that he sold off. I mentioned before we started recording how wild it would be if Vince McMahon's face was at the security checkpoint at Lincoln Financial Stadium of somebody, you know, needing to stop him from going in. It's the guy that literally has been running the company for the last four decades. Some of the stuff that's come out in the last week or so regarding that have been kind of interesting. The identifications of the corporate officers came out, and it's still very unclear what any of them knew, didn't know. It's just who they are at this point. Vaughn, do you see anything getting worse between now and WrestleMania with this?
I'm sure WWE hopes that's not the case, because we're about 2 weeks out, and this is the last, you know, this is the worst time you could have some terrible news come out. But I mean, honestly, I don't know. I didn't know that the names would come out before WrestleMania. So I think it's wide open. I mean, bombshells could drop in the weeks leading up. And I feel like in the days leading up to major events, that's when big news tends to come out, and we'll see. But I can't even put a finger on it, honestly, as far as if something else will come out. Like I said, I know WWE hopes that that's not the case, but sometimes things just happen. Life has a funny way of working out in these circumstances sometimes.
And sometimes people would specifically try to get, you know, news out. You see when news drops happen sometimes. WWE's got that whole week basically to themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could see stuff come out during WrestleMania. And I mean, WWE even took advantage of that themselves last year by the Monday morning after WrestleMania ended, coming out with actually the TKO announcement, which was which will be a year now for the Monday after WrestleMania. So, Nick, getting to the actual show itself, what excites you about this year's WrestleMania?
I think I would be remiss if I didn't say finally seeing Cody finish the story. I hate to use that phrase because it's been beaten into our heads, but I was shocked being at WrestleMania 39 that they did not have Cody win last year. So I think kudos, first of all, for them managing to make it interesting for another whole year and to add elements like The Rock into it, whether this was the intended plan all along or things have changed up along the way. You've heard different stuff. I don't think it's really important at this point. I don't think it matters what their original direction was versus what has played out. I just am very interested in seeing how it all comes together. Personally, I feel like Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins are going to lose the tag team match on night one, which will just make everything that much more interesting on night two. And I do really like the way that this has all come together, kind of against all odds. I really did think that they should have put the belt on Cody last year, that it should be over, but they've managed to drag it out another year. And I shouldn't even say drag, because it has been an interesting ride the whole way. But now I want to see, you know, it's kind of like, can they stick the landing? Like when there's a popular TV show that's coming to an end, can they come to a finale that makes the most possible people happy? It's tricky. And I want to see if WWE can pull it off.
I feel like this year, Vaughn, that the just the way that they've set this up with the Roman, Cody, and Seth Drew matches on night two and the tag match being on night one, they're making this less of two standalone shows and actually sort of episodic WrestleMania, because you have to watch night one to be able to know what's going to happen at night two now and the effects. Do you like that from the perspective of storytelling? And do you like it from, like we were just talking before about, like, what if you want tickets to one show and not the other? So
yeah, I think for this year's show, it works. I don't know if it will work universally every year. You kind of have one match bleed into the next night. They've done that in the past. I think the last time WrestleMania was here in Philly, they had like a tag team battle royal where the winners would challenge for the titles on the show. So it wasn't really like night one, night two, obviously. It was more like pre-show bleeding into the main show. But I think for this year's show, it works because, you know, they had to pivot, obviously, with The Rock and the reaction he garnered. So you pivot to the tag team match in night one, and you go to night two with the two singles matches. I'm not sure, again, I'm not sure if it works every single year. You don't want to force it, and then you get into a situation where it doesn't make any sense. But I think for this year's show, and I think it's something that they might try to do again in the future, it makes sense business-wise, too, because now you're forcing people, you can potentially force people at least to buy tickets to both shows. You can't just miss one show. I mean, sure, you could have. It's pretty much the same thing last couple of years with two nights. But I think some people said, oh, I'll just go to night one and I'll watch night two from home because, you know, it costs a lot of money. But now it's like we get to see The Rock the first night, but then the next night you got to see Cody. So it's like potentially win at least. So there might be some people who have bought tickets in only one night and now they're like looking at, oh, man, if you bought tickets to only Sunday, you're looking at Saturday like, man, but I get to see The Rock on Saturday now. So I might have to cough up a couple hundred more dollars to get tickets to that show, too. So I think from a business standpoint for this year's show, it makes sense. I think it makes sense overall, just in general for this year's show. I'm not totally sold, though, that it works every single year. I don't want WWE to get into a pattern where they're forcing night one to affect night two. If it makes sense, do it, but you don't have to force it.
Yeah, I think they did something like that with the women's tag titles where they had that gauntlet or whatever it was that led to the shot the next day, whatever it was that they did in the past. I think that was 2 years ago. And if my memory off the top of my head works well still, I think that was WrestleMania 15 you were referring to in Philadelphia. Yep. Where the tag team battle royal was won by D'Lo Brown and Test, and then they faced Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart at WrestleMania 15. So 25 years ago, not bad. The one thing I'll say for the night one bleeding into night two stuff too, and it's the same thing I said prior to AEW in Wembley, the risk factor that comes with main event guys working in matches that aren't the main event of the whole show. We saw that with Wembley with MJF and Adam Cole going up against Aussie Open. We saw it again in AEW at All Out with MJF against The Righteous, I think it was, on that one too. So it is a risk, you know, and not only that, but you got Seth Rollins working twice coming off of two tears in his knee. So you have to, you know, I mean, these guys are pros. There's going to be safety that goes along with this. They know, but it's wrestling. You know, you don't know when actually the injuries are going to occur.
So. And that's why it could backfire. That's why I don't think you should try to do it every year, because you do run the risk of putting your talent at more risk of getting hurt. Heaven forbid Roman Reigns gets injured in that first match, and now he can't defend the title the next night. And you've built up all this story. You've told the story for 3 years now. Yeah. And the moment he's supposed to lose this title and pass that torch on to Cody Rhodes, he is too injured. Now, again, knock on wood that that doesn't happen, but that's, like you said, that's a possibility. That's the risk you take. But I think, you know, like you said, they could do it safely. The Rock is involved. So you'd imagine he's not going to take too many risks. But everybody else in the match is working twice. So he's the only one not working twice. So, yeah, you can take not to take that many risks with The Rock, but it doesn't matter. He won't have another match till next year, probably. You got to worry about Cody and Roman and Seth still being on the road after this, too.
And I was at The Rock's last actual match, I think, which would have been WrestleMania 29 when he faced John Cena in the main event at MetLife Stadium. And I think
he did have that one match against Eric Rowan, though, at WrestleMania 32.
That's why I said real match. But The Rock tore like every muscle in his body wrestling John Cena and totally delayed the filming of Hercules, if I remember correctly, from working that one match. And that's actually the reason he hasn't wrestled for the last 11 years, because insurance-wise, they could never make it work. So now whatever has changed, he's back. Nikki, you surprised to see him? Are they saving him and Roman for another destination this year? Or are they going to hold that to 41?
Yeah, I think they have kind of the advantage of the goodwill of the fans, if you will. I think that they're just so hot right now that they are not pigeonholed into any one thing when it comes to something like that. Definitely there's been reporting out there that from credible sources that says, oh, they might have it on one of the Saudi shows. I could definitely see that happening, but I could also just as easily see them holding it for WrestleMania 41. I mean, they have shown the willingness to plan stuff out, not just with Cody and Roman this year, but in the past, a whole year in advance. And I think they feel confident that they can make the story last that long if they need to.
Nick, who wins at WrestleMania, Cody Rhodes or Roman Reigns?
It has to be Cody.
It doesn't have to be.
I know it doesn't. I would. I'm not in the habit of wagering on professional wrestling matches since people know the outcome somewhere. But I would feel strongly that Cody is going to win this year. I would be even more surprised this year if he loses than I was last year.
I actually thought it was a good move last year, and so I'll be vindicated this year if he wins. Vaughn, who do you think is winning, Cody or Roman?
I agree with Nick. It has to be Cody. You don't change the direction that they did. You moved literally heaven and earth, pretty much. Not literally, again, that's ridiculous, but you moved heaven and earth.
Thanks, Gorilla.
But you moved a lot of things around, including The Rock. The Rock thought he was getting a main event match on night two. He's not. He's getting a main event match on night one and a tag team match, no less. Like I said, we don't know if the original plans changed. Obviously, they may have had this in mind the whole time, but it doesn't seem like it. And so when you move all these things around, the result has to be what the fans wanted all along, which was Cody winning this match. They don't want to just see him in the match. They want to see him win the match. Yeah. You know, it'd be one thing if you're going to have him lose anyway, you might as well not even put him in the match, because then you might start a riot in Philly, which is
you really want to send the fans home unhappy in Philadelphia. Like,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Well, they've done that with Roman Reigns once before, if I remember right, with the Royal Rumble. So
that's true, and it was bad. I was in the building that night. It didn't sound good. Both him and The Rock got booed together, and it could happen again Saturday night.
So Philly is really part of their backstory too. They haven't touched that one yet either, but that they were together that night. And also for anybody who's a newer fan, I'm realizing referring to Gorilla Monsoon's old sayings isn't necessarily something everyone's going to know off the top of their head. Gorilla used to intentionally misuse the word literally all the time. But they're literally hanging from the rafters. That was one of my favorites from him. But I think it's going to be Cody too. But knowing also how close they are to the Hogan number for Roman gives me pause of, do we want this guy to be like the generational guy, like getting to that point? And knowing, you mentioned the Saudi shows, they've got Backlash in France. They've got the Cleveland Browns Stadium hosting SummerSlam. They've got Money in the Bank in Toronto. They've got the... what's the other one they have around the same time as Wembley? I'm trying to remember. The Bash in Berlin later this year, too. So there's more of those stadium type and unique destinations that they're going to need lots of interesting main events for that they're not totally clear yet, too. So while it's easy for me to say, yeah, Cody, because how else are you ending WrestleMania? Like, until it actually happens, I'm not assuming anything. So, some of the other matches on the card, it's not totally, not everything is totally drawn out yet as of us recording this, the Thursday before the Monday when this launches. What do you think of the women's title matches, Nick, and the way that those ended up landing with Becky taking on Rhea Ripley and Bayley taking on Io Sky?
Yeah, I like what WWE has done to set up both of those. I think of the two, the stronger story is, of course, Bayley versus Io, and the kind of disintegration of the group that she created in Damage Control, kind of giving Bayley the boot, her turning face and going against Io. I think that story is very strong. I think Becky versus Rhea is obviously a very popular matchup. I'm not sure that the narrative is quite as strong, but I think that Becky and Rhea are both so over. And they'll find ways, I think, even down the stretch to kind of make this compelling to people who, even if they don't watch every week, I think they're both talented enough to do that. The one person I feel like is kind of conspicuous by her absence from this whole picture is Bianca Belair. I really feel like they need to have something interesting for Bianca to do. And it kind of surprises me that she's on the outside a little bit here.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up next for Vaughn. You know, the rest of the directions for all of the women in WWE right now are not as clear as some of the men's directions. My thought for Bianca would be Bianca versus the debuting Jade Cargill, if we can get there somehow, because I think that would be a match that a lot of people would be interested in. Might be too soon to do that also. There's tons of other people that we don't know what the tag division's doing yet with the Kabuki Warriors. We don't know what people like Liv Morgan, Nia Jax, Raquel Rodriguez. There's all sorts of people without a solid direction. Is there any one match that you could see of the women who are not currently booked that makes the most sense to you?
Man, you would think that it would involve Nia Jax or Liv Morgan, since they're heavily involved in the Becky Lynch angle right now, with not really with Ripley, but with Becky Lynch, at least on her side of things. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think, you know, they already did a tag team title match last week. I guess they could do another one. It feels like something that WWE will eventually throw together in the week leading up. Like, oh, we got this women's big 8-man tag type deal, you know, with the other members of Damage Control and maybe Dakota Kai going against Bianca Belair, Naomi, you know, Liv or something like that. Good guys versus bad guys type deal. But yeah, it is interesting to see that, like, they have two women's matches on the card. I think they're two big matches. And like, I agree in that the story with the Bayley Io Sky match is probably the better story, but Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley is a big match. It's big names, and it's probably one of the most marquee matches they can do in the women's division at the moment. So you got two big matches on the top of the card, but not much depth outside of that. And there's a lot of women that, like you said, Bianca Belair, not in a familiar position for her. Naomi just came back. Ain't got much going on with her right now. Unless you count the stuff with Damage Control and them talking about Damage Control last week on SmackDown. But that doesn't feel like something that's going to play itself out before WrestleMania. That feels like something that might happen after WrestleMania. So we'll see. It is an interesting thing that there isn't a lot more going on with the women's division, at least from a depth standpoint. Two big matches, but not much else.
And maybe you'd see Naomi and Jade go against the Kabuki Warriors for the tag titles. Another person on the outside looking in right now is Tiffany Stratton, who's been pretty hot lately. And, you know, I could see her in there with somebody like a Natalya, maybe getting a singles match at a WrestleMania for once, you know, veteran versus newbie type stuff, some sort of disrespect sort of thing. Do you think they need those? These kind of drove me nuts because I liked them, but I didn't at the same time. Those destination battle royals that they have every single year, either the Andre the Giant battle royal on the men's side or the other one on the women's side that they took the name away from when they realized that the Fabulous Bula might not have been the best person that they could be naming that after. But those didn't do anything much for me. Even the winners of those never really went anywhere for what the importance of it would be. What did you think? Are you okay with those, like, kind of going away, Vaughn?
I mean, it's a nice thing for the wrestlers to get on the card. It's a nice way to get a bunch of wrestlers on the card. I'm sure they appreciate, you know, being on WrestleMania in a match like this. Just to be on the card is special for them. And I think under the old creative regime, yeah, I agree with you. You know, they didn't do anything with these wrestlers, even the winners. They didn't do much with. And maybe, you know, you can bring them back, but under this new regime, maybe they do focus on, put more emphasis on the winner and pushing that person. Or maybe you add some more stakes to it. Hey, the winner of this Battle Royal, they get an Intercontinental Championship match at some point or something like that. So I think there is some value in it. But when you have, everything is going to be good on this card for the most part. You don't want to drag it down with just a random Battle Royal. You know, I think they're trying to make sure everything that's on the card, even if it's 6, 7, 8 matches per night, has a place. It has a story. It has meaning. It carries some weight. I don't know if they're really going to throw in the Battle Royal type matches unless they really add some stakes to it. Under the way it was before, when it was under Vince McMahon's creative vision, no, it did nothing for me. It did nothing for anybody. And that's the reason why they don't do the Women's Battle Royal anymore. And they don't put the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal even on WrestleMania. It's on SmackDown.
Right.
So, yeah. So maybe the last couple of years should be some indication, because those were under Triple H's regime. He didn't even put it on the show itself. So. Yeah, I guess it's not coming back.
Yeah, or if we look back at SummerSlam, the reason for the Battle Royal happening was the partnership, the sponsorship with Slim Jim, where they did the Battle Royal on the, I think that was on the main show of SummerSlam.
I believe so, which could happen again. I can definitely see that happening again. And they've said that they want to do more of those types of activations in the future with sponsored matches. And the only reason why this match exists is for the sponsorship, which, I mean, for a match of, you know, of little magnitude with a bunch of wrestlers, it's a good excuse to get them on a card. All right, well, here, you know,
exactly.
Hopefully Snickers or Slim Jim is happy with the match. They got their logo plastered all over the place, and the wrestlers get a chance to be on WrestleMania. So when you bring up that point, I guess that could happen. It, for the money, obviously, but it could happen.
So Nick, Gunther's match reported originally before all the things went down with Vince McMahon was scheduled to be against Brock Lesnar, actually a match that I discussed with him on this show not too long ago. That was kind of, I believe he referred to Brock Lesnar as his personal end boss. Yeah. But that's not going to happen now because of various things. You can read about them in lawsuits. Is Sami Zayn the next best guy up for the Intercontinental title, and should Gunther lose?
I was a little surprised once they put the gauntlet match together, because it seemed like they were emphasizing Chad Gable's story there and how it means more to him than any of the other competitors. But I will say that they were also very, deliberate about how they were doing stuff with Sammy over the past maybe 2 months or so, and where they were telling this story of, oh, I'm desperate to find my path to WrestleMania. I believe in myself, even when other people don't. Last year, I was in a position. This year, I'm not. So I dug that too. I think that Sammy, you know, everybody pulls out all the stops. Everybody puts on their best possible performance at WrestleMania. But I think that Sammy is maybe even like a notch above the rest of the roster in that regard. He will rise to the moment for sure. They're definitely going to have like an awesome match. I'm not as convinced that he is the guy to beat Gunther, but I also don't have a great answer for who that would be at this point. So
I don't either. And I could also easily see Gunther being one of the first challengers out of WrestleMania for whomever, you know, emerges with the world championships too. I kind of wonder if the whole I don't know my path to WrestleMania thing that we've now seen done multiple times is becoming the anyone can win the Royal Rumble version for 2024, because we saw Seth and KO both be like, oh, I don't know, am I going to make it to Mania? And Seth ended up with Cody Rhodes, and KO ended up hosting the KO show and having a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin out of that. So I don't know if that's really the best. It's just not the best storytelling. And similarly, kind of ending a point that I was going to make about the women too, I feel like the problem why we don't have more women's matches right now is because they really just haven't committed to women's storytelling in general. Also, there's been a number of injuries that have hurt probably what they were trying to do anyway. But Gunther or Sammy, Vaughn, long circuitous way of getting to the point there.
I also think to bring up a good point before I get to Sammy and Gunther about the women, they haven't committed to telling that journey, you know, of a woman's wrestler getting to WrestleMania. So that's a good point. But as far as Sammy and Gunther, I'm not totally convinced that Chad Gable is not going to be in that match. His shoulders were not down on the mat Monday. That's true. Like you said, Nick, they've invested so much time and energy and effort into telling his story. It would feel kind of weird to just not have him involved. And if he is involved, if, again, that's not for certain, I would say he wins the Intercontinental Championship beating Gunther in a triple threat, so to speak. But as of right now, I don't know if Sammy's that guy neither. I don't know if I'd have Sami Zayn be the guy to beat Gunther. To me, it'd be Chad Gable, because not only do you beat Gunther in a big spot, but also you pass that heat on to Chad Gable. You make him a star. Sami Zayn is pretty much a made guy.
Yeah.
Fans love him, and they're going to love him even if he loses to Gunther. He's not going to lose any steam. He's one of those guys that people just love regardless, and he can lose, tell that story about losing and bounce back. Chad Gable, I don't know if he's quite earned that level of love from the fans yet, but I think having him beat Gunther could put him on that level. So, I don't know if that's totally done yet, but as is, I think Gunther beats Sami Zayn.
I would just hate it to become a triple threat and have Chad Gable pin Sami Zayn.
That can't happen. Yeah. That can't happen. Whoever wins has to beat Gunther.
Here's my suggestion to the WWE, and this is something I've thought about for a long time with triple threats and fatal four ways and six pack challenges and all the other different multiple man matches and multiple person matches that we see. Bring back the ECW style ones. Bring back the three-way dance where you actually have an elimination in the match, because it really eliminates all possible cutesy booking. You actually can get heat on someone for the first pinfall in the match and then have the actual finish of the match. I hate the idea that we just popped into my head of how many days of Gunther is champion, 650 or whatever it's been, and then he loses because somebody else gets pinned. Like, no, that's bad storytelling. Don't ever think about doing that. It's just not a good idea. So we're so far into this show, and it almost plays into his storyline a little bit, Nick, but I almost forgot to ask you, is Drew McIntyre beating Seth Rollins?
Yes, I think so. I think for a couple of reasons. I think Seth's kind of questionable health suggests that he divest himself of the championship.
He's wrestling two matches.
I understand that, but I just feel like, I feel like let Seth wrestle these two matches and then get him some time off would be great for him. And I think that Drew is doing the best character work maybe that I've ever seen from him in WWE. He has just been phenomenal. He has taken the social media troll game to like God tier level. He's keeping CM Punk's name like hot. Not that Punk would ever like fall off in terms of the minds of the fans, but he's just doing so many things at the exact same time and totally believable. I'm not playing a character, but I'm telling the truth type of stuff. Being a hypocrite without acknowledging it. There's so many facets to the stuff that he's doing that are superb. And I would love to see him rewarded with the championship in front of fans that he didn't get before, even though he's, you know, ostensibly a heel now. I think it would be great. So I think that he will win, and I hope that he wins.
One little touch that he's added to this whole thing. First of all, what he's taking here is the Bret Hart turn master class, because he's doing Bret Hart's turn from like WrestleMania 13, basically. But if you notice, when he walks down the aisle, he still slaps a few hands. So he's leaving the doubt in your mind, like, oh, wait, is he a heel or is he not supposed to be a heel here? And he's, I kind of like, love that.
It's like Diesel back in with 96. You've got a black glove. You get the love. If you don't got a black glove, then I ain't got no love for you. If I guess you got a kilt, he got love for you. If you got a sword, he going to dap you up. If you ain't got a sword or a kilt, he got no love for you.
Todd Pettengill once sang, if you want Diesel to respect you, buy a black glove at the mall at the Slammy Awards, if you remember that one. But I have tons of these. I'm better at WrestleMania like ancient history than I am at WrestleMania current history, I think. But Also on the men's side, we got a couple of possibilities. I'm not sure anything is even announced yet. We have that six-way tag team ladder deal that they're doing with Damian Priest and Finn Balor and whoever ends up qualifying out of all of that. Logan Paul, I'm assuming KO. I mean, right? That seems like the direction. I mean,
I thought it was going to be LA Knight, but it looks like he's going to be doing something with AJ Styles. So I don't know. He'll be on
Orton. Randy Orton for Logan Paul, I think. It seems like the direction they've leaned into these past couple weeks.
Could you also go triple threat KO Orton Logan there? I wouldn't probably mind that to add more generals into that match to help Logan Paul out a little bit.
I like that. I like that. And KO needs something as well. So yeah, I dig it.
What about, I would think that a multiple person, this is another one where the women might play into it too. Some sort of multiple person matchup between the LWO and Legado del Fantasma seems pretty likely. I don't know if you want to split off Zelina and Elektra, or if you want them to just sort of be part of the match or the people at ringside during the match. How many members do we have there? Let's see. We have Ray, we have Carlito, we have Wild, and we have Escobar. Wild and Del Toro.
Yeah.
Then you also sort of got Dragon Lee on the fringe, but then Legado just has Escobar, Humberto, Angel.
Angel Garza.
So they would need like one more member or a defector to even that out a little bit. Like you'd need Dragon Lee to go to the other side, or you know somebody to go to the other side. But
yeah, I don't know how you finesse this one. I'm interested to see how they split the matches up between each night and how many they put on each night and the timing of the shows, because we don't have the, you know, we're not back in the day where we have 8-hour WrestleMania. So yeah. I will say I think they're about 4 hours apiece now. How much time they give to each match and which match goes where. And as far as they haven't even announced this yet, but if they do this, like what night does this go on and how, you know, how does this all play out? I'm really interested in seeing the formatting of the show. They've announced some matches that's going to be night one, night two, but they haven't done a lot of that. Like even the Gunther Sami Zayn match, I don't think has been announced for a night.
No.
I don't think Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley has been announced for a specific night. I think they only have announced tag team match night one, world title matches night two. So I think that's all we know. We'll see how it plays out after that, though.
I would think the two women's title matches would probably be night one. If the two men's title matches are both night two, that would seem a little bit like symmetrical, even with the Rumble win as the and the Chamber win as kind of the thing there, too. Nick, what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
I just can't wait to see how many matches end up being promoted as co-main events.
Come on.
I think it's silly as heck for WWE to do that. There can only be one main event. But I think if the women's matches both end up on night one, they're going to promote both of those as co-main events and the tag team match as main event. So that
triple
could be,
main event.
We're going to end up with like half the card on night one as co-main events, which is just absolutely ridiculous.
You know what I would do match order at that point, though, on night one is I would lead off WrestleMania with Roman and Rock versus Cody and Seth.
Yeah,
that way that you've got sense. As much time as you can to get them healthy and fine mm-hmm. for the next day. And I think I said this a few months ago when we talked about this, but I would go Bayley and Io as the last match of WrestleMania. You could then say you have the first Japanese person ever main eventing WrestleMania.
Man, I agree with you on the opener because, like you said, it gives them as much recovery time as possible. It'd be odd to see The Rock come out in the opening match as opposed to him being he'd be come out in the opening match of night one, which when he was originally supposedly slated for the last match of night two. That'd be the complete opposite. But regarding the women, I feel like if they put one of those two matches at the end of the show, I feel like their move would be Becky versus Rhea Ripley. I know Bayley and Io Sky is a better story, and it'd be a more historic moment. Two women of color being in the main event again.
Oh, wow.
But I you know, just from a namesake standpoint, you got Becky Lynch, you got Rhea Ripley. To me, that's the main event between those two matches.
One of the other things I feel like they're doing, because the Bloodline was so successful, because the Judgment Day to an extent has been really successful, and because Damage Control has been pretty successful, is there's so many of these groups now, and I didn't really realize it until I look back at my notes and I see LWO written down. I see Legado del Fantasma written down. I'm realizing, like, oh yeah, what about the I forgot the name of Kerry Cross's group already.
Oh, man. The Last Testament?
The Final Testament and Bobby Lashley in the Street Profits sort of a match. So there's all of these groups that are popping up now. And then the other interesting thing, too, with the Mania card and who's missing and who's off of it and stuff, there's still a whole bunch of people who are called up who are still going back and forth to NXT. Like, I was thinking about Bron Breakker, who's now debuting on SmackDown, but he's in the middle of he went back to NXT, and he's teaming with Baron Corbin, and they're the champions because they won the Dusty Cup and the titles. So they're defending on Stand and Deliver on Saturday morning now. So
yeah, it's early Saturday.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like there's other opportunities, because also like LWO is in the tournament for the tag thing on NXT also. So are they not in the, you know, I don't know. There's so many different directions you can go in with it. But like you said, they're probably trying to get as many people on the card as they can. They're trying to get as much exposure for, you know. But for me, WrestleMania is the card, and you don't have to try to squeeze everyone on it. Not everyone deserves a WrestleMania spot.
I feel you on that. If WrestleMania is the Super Bowl, you know, not everybody gets to go to the Super Bowl. Like, there's only two teams in the Super Bowl. The other 30 teams at home are sitting home. But this isn't real sports, right? This is still make-believe. So you can control what happens, right? So I don't mind when WWE is of the mindset of, like, all right, let's get everybody on the card. Let's get everybody a WrestleMania, not only a moment, but at least some shine at WrestleMania. I think it's good for the morale. I think it keeps the whole roster upbeat during the lead up, and they're probably more willing to, you know, more in a better mood when they're doing all this press and media promoting the event when they're actually on the card, as opposed to be like, yeah, watch it, I won't be there. You know, like that's a little bit different when you're actually on the card. You probably feel a little more compelled to promote in the weeks leading up.
And I think there's something to be said. I always liked doing this. I went to the, I guess it was four straight SummerSlams in Brooklyn, where I just made a whole weekend out of it. And they had a SmackDown before and a Raw after and that kind of stuff. The stuff that's on the SmackDown before and the Raw after and the NXT, this is all part of the same thing. So they need interesting, appealing things on those shows too. Both of those, I'm pretty sure all those shows are, if they're not sold out, they're very close to being sold out at this point. So, going back to the SmackDown before WrestleMania, so we've also got the Hall of Fame on Friday night before WrestleMania, after SmackDown, long weekend. And you got SmackDown, Hall of Fame, NXT Stand and Deliver in the morning, WrestleMania at night, WrestleMania, and then Raw. But Hall of Fame, Nick, I don't know if this is something you regularly look forward to, but who stands out to you in this year?
I think in terms of, and we've talked about this internally at Wrestling Junkie, I think that Thunderbolt Patterson is probably the most interesting inductee in this year's class, just because he's kind of like a little bit out of left field nominee to begin with, but also the fact that he was involved in lawsuits about racial discrimination and fighting for unionization, types of things that WWE definitely would not have celebrated when Vince McMahon was in charge. He's interesting. US Express is also interesting to me because I feel like, this is not an original thought. I've seen other people say this that I respect, but individually, both Wyndham and Rotunda, obviously, I think deserve to be in WWE Hall of Fame. And one of them is already in as an individual, but their time as a tag team was like a top tag team was very short. So it's interesting that they made the cut.
Yeah, I will point out that I believe Mike Rotunda and Barry Windham won the tag team championship in Poughkeepsie, New York, which is where I live. So they won their championships about 5 minutes from my apartment. But Hall of Fame, Vaughn, like, you know, people knock it. People say, like, oh, there's so many people in it that don't deserve to be in it. Everybody likes to do that. But to me, it's a Hall of Fame for a booked sport. So some of it is going to be subjective, and unless you have specific parameters, like, to me, it's like, what was your impact? Did you draw? Were you a headliner? You know, and not even everybody passes that test when you look at the WWE Hall of Fame. But for me, it's just nice to be honored by your peers or a company that you work for. In Thunderbolt's case, like, I don't think any of his peers are really around. Some of them are, But, you know, he didn't even work for this company. Like, he wrestled, I think, 9 matches for the WWE in 1969, which is just incredible. I looked that one up yesterday. But, like, what's your general vibe for the Hall of Fame? Do you enjoy when that comes up annually?
I enjoy it for the wrestlers themselves. They're very happy and they're honored to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. It's everybody wants to be honored. So I'm never like angry at the wrestlers for being happy about it. Of course, they should be happy. They should be honored and they can increase their booking fees moving forward. Now I'm WWE Hall of Famer, you know, whoever, you know, Bull Nakano, instead of just Bull Nakano, I'm WWE Hall of Famer. So now yesterday's price is not today's price type deal. So you have that. And it's nice. And I understand from the standpoint of like, there is no voting process even for this. It's just like, pick a person and we'll invite them. If they want to do it, we'll do it. So I don't put too much stock into it. It is what it is. I've been to a couple of Hall of Fame ceremonies. There are long nights. They drag on. The fans interrupt all the speeches. It's not the most exciting time in the world in person. It's not an exciting watch necessarily on TV, but it's not necessarily a bad thing either. I'm happy for the wrestlers. They get their time in the sun. They get to, thank all the fans who've been cheering them on for many years. Thank all the people in their lives who helped them get to that point. You helped them become stars in wrestling. Who helped them become Hall of Famers. It's a nice night overall. It's not for everybody, but I understand its purpose, and it's a good way to honor the past too. You still have to honor the past. I don't think these past wrestlers like Thunderbolt Patterson, who could easily just be lost to history, shouldn't be. He made an impact. He won titles around the country, cut great promos around the country. He deserves to be honored in some way, as does Bull Nakano, the U.S. Express. Even though a lot of people don't even know who the U.S. Express even are. They know that Mike Rotunda was IRS and Barry Windham was in the Four Horsemen. And, Barry Windham carries Bray Wyatt's name. You know, Bray Wyatt was named after Barry Windham in real life. So they know that. But regardless, doesn't matter. It's like you said, it's all make-believe anyway. It's for a booked sport, work sport. So I've never gotten too outraged or too bummed about it at all. It just is what it is. It's a nice attraction for WrestleMania, and it's a nice pat on the back for wrestlers who've sacrificed so many things to put WWE on the map in some ways, and in other ways put pro wrestling as a whole on the map. They deserve at least that. They get a ring, they get the time in the sun, they get, I don't know if they still do the Legends contracts with the Hall of Fame, but I would assume this is maybe some financial incentive in it as well. Yeah. So you get paid, you get a ring, you get to talk to in front of thousands of people, dress nice, be honored, sell some, make some merch money, and maybe you get some money on the back end for your booking appearances moving forward. I have no issues with it.
What I like, and lately it's come up in some AEW circles where people have complained at times about people who they didn't know appearing on AEW TV. And a lot of the AEW reaction to that is like, well, look them up. It's 2024. You can just look who this person is up on Google. Doesn't take that long. And for me, the WWE side of that is I like that the Hall of Fame exists because like when names like Thunderbolt Patterson or even some of the legacy wing inductees that they've done in the last several years, like let's educate people a little bit about how we got here. You've got this huge expansive library of content. It's very easy to forget the past, but you know, there's some really cool things you can learn from it. There's some really cool characters you can learn from. And just kind of knowing where wrestling's been kind of educates you on where it is now. I don't think Thunderbolt Patterson, I said this to Greg Oliver, who Nick knows well from his time with Slam Wrestling, but like Thunderbolt Patterson was never somebody I would have envisioned going in a Vince McMahon era of the WWE Hall of Fame. He's important. I think people will disagree on why he's important. But I think at the same time, I think like the things that he represented both to black fans and any fans, really, you know, his promos, he drew pretty much everywhere he was, like his importance was unionization. Like it's really fascinating. Like once I started doing some digging on him yesterday, and I did know a little bit, like it actually fascinated me even more to learn what I learned. And that was just me futzing around for 10 minutes on my lunch break. But you know, I like the education side of it. I really do. And I think if more fans, you don't have to go back and watch all these old matches. Matches don't hold up necessarily over time when you watch them 40 years later, but to just kind of understand where things came from and understand what you're looking at, I think is the main key. So we're at 45 minutes now. So we're going to move on to the three count. I have a couple of specific WrestleMania related questions. So Nick, your favorite WrestleMania of all time is, and why?
My favorite WrestleMania was X7 because it was the first one I attended in person. Wow. I can't believe how far away from the actual action I was, because it was in the old Astrodome, and it's inconceivable to me that I was under the same roof. I had to laugh because I was editing Vaughn's very good look back at the top 40 matches in WrestleMania history, and there were matches there that made the list, and I'm like, man, I was so far away from the action. It was crazy. But just being there for the first time, and I think all of the kind of promotion that WWE put into that event at the time just kind of sticks with me in my head forever. So that will always be the one for me.
When that WrestleMania happened, I kind of looked at that as sort of a WWF pep rally, because they WCW had just wrapped up, I think, the week or two before that. And it just seemed like the most pro WWF atmosphere possible. But then they also, you look at the matches on there, like you said, you know, you had like four probably easily, you know, all decade matches on one card.
Yeah.
So it was just an unbelievable card. That one was going to be mine with WrestleMania 8 as one of my other ones, because 1992 was probably one of my favorite WWF years. WrestleMania 8's main event, maybe a little iffy because it's Hogan instead with Papa Shango running up the aisle about 10 minutes late. But Macho Man and Ric Flair, Roddy Piper and Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Just a very fun time to be a WWF fan in 1992. Vaughn, your favorite WrestleMania and why?
I agree with Nick. WrestleMania 17. I've never known anybody that actually attended that show in person. So, Nick, we got to talk, because that was my first WrestleMania that I watched live on pay-per-view. I wasn't able to order it beforehand because, you know, mom didn't want to pay for it. But WrestleMania 17, I think she realized that I was a big wrestling fan by that point, and it's like, all right, I'll pay for it. And I watched that, and I had never seen a wrestling show look like that before. It was, you know, throughout my time as a 90s kid, I watched wrestling in an arena, you know, 16,000-17,000 people tops in this little stage or whatever. You see in the same backdrop, outside of like the exceptions like WrestleMania 8 and 92, which when I was 12, I hadn't really grasped what that was yet, or WrestleMania 3, something like that, WrestleMania 6. But so from, like, you know, obviously from WrestleMania 8 on, they didn't do stadiums. So my frame of reference was 14, 15, those arena shows, 16.
Yep.
And then I see WrestleMania 17, and I'm like, what in the hell? And I knew what the Astrodome was. I was a big football fan, so I knew what the Astrodome was. I knew the Oilers used to play there, and the Astros played there. But I still didn't comprehend what it would look like until I saw it. And I was like, whoa. And it really blew me away as a 12-year-old to be like, this is what wrestling could be? Like, this looks bigger than the Super Bowl. Like, it was beyond my comprehension. And it was a legendary show with a rough ending. But I don't think I don't want that to ruin the whole show. And it's still one of my favorite WrestleMania of all time. I haven't watched it all the way through in years, but it still holds up to me as my favorite.
Not the question I was intending on asking. Mine was WrestleMania 5. But Nick, what was the first WrestleMania you actually watched while it was happening?
Oh, I don't. That's a good question. I don't remember. 100%, not back that far. 15, I definitely did. 14, maybe? It might have been 14.
Wow, okay. Because we didn't have pay-per-view where I lived for the first 5. So 5, I actually had to go to somebody's house for a party to go watch it. 1, I watched on VHS. 2, I was supposed to go to a closed-circuit location, believe it or not, but the satellite went out, and we ended up watching Rambo First Blood instead. But I was nice. What was I, 5? I was 5 or 6, and like I fell asleep, and that was the end of it. Nick, any favorite Mania moment? I mean, you got a lot of history to go through, 39 years worth.
I'm very lucky to have gone to a couple in person. I think probably I'm going to go with Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. I know that's kind of like a cliche one, but I was there in person. And I was in the press box, and I can just remember people in the press box reacting to it, being in their feelings about it. And even Adam Hopkins, who was the, you know, head of comms for at the time for WWE, just kind of like going around and talking to people about it. So I think just
was it consoling just, people?
Yeah. People were crying. I mean, it was right. Yeah, it was
wild.
I mean, you guys know. I think that the no cheering in the press box thing is a little bit different in pro wrestling, and it can be because it's a work sport, but I still like try to play it kind of cool. And mm-hmm. It was amazing to me to see what people's reactions were to that match in the press box. So I can only imagine what people out in the actual crowd were feeling. So I think that to me is probably number one.
I'm going to go with, I was thinking, and I hadn't even written down what I was just going to say, whatever came to my mind. I was thinking like, okay, Hogan and Andre Slam. I'm like, yeah, you know, I wasn't watching that live. I knew that happened already when I watched it. And I was thinking of Warrior, and I was like, nah, probably not that one either. Warrior beating Hogan. I think it's the ladder match for Mania 10 for me, Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, because I actually watched that match while it was going on, not knowing, you know, the finish, not really having seen anything like that in my life. And just one of those things where you're a wrestling fan and you're seeing something you haven't seen before. That's a weird feeling. It's a weird moment. And when it's actually good, and what it's led to is like ladder matches, like probably way too often now, but that was the original to an extent. I know there was one between Brett and Sean on Coliseum Home Video that took place before that was existing out there too. But that was really the first one prominently featured on a WWE pay-per-view. Favorite moment Mania-wise for you, Vaughn?
WrestleMania 10 had a good moment with Brett won a title and Owens in the IOA looking up at him. Like, I can't believe he won again. But I actually have a tie for two of my favorite moments. One, I was actually in the building for. That would be when Daniel Bryan won the title at WrestleMania 30. Just the lead up to that was amazing. Just fans, you know, rallying behind him and him finally being put in the match. And then, the opening match with Triple H was a classic. And then the triple threat match was a lot of fun. And I thought Michael Cole had a great call. I didn't watch, hear it in person, but after the fact, I was like, wow, that's a great call. And then in the building, it was just an incredible vibe. And it came after the Undertaker lost the streak, which was also a crazy moment in time, which felt like the day the earth stood still in the Superdome that day. But I think Daniel Bryan is like that moment of him winning is like quintessential WrestleMania. That's what WrestleMania to me is all about, is those type of happy endings. And the other part of that tie would be another happy ending. And it's funny, Daniel Bryan is on the opposite end of this one. It would be when Kofi Kingston won the title at WrestleMania 35. I wasn't in the building for that, but watching it at home, it meant a lot to me. And I think it meant a lot to a lot of other black wrestling fans to see Kofi Kingston get that moment. It really meant a lot. And I think that's still I think for a lot of black wrestling fans, it's an emotional moment to see a black person get put on that pedestal, and three black people in general as a New Day celebrate their joy. And he put his kids into the ring, and they're holding up the belt with his family. And that was just an amazing moment. Another one where that's what wrestling is all about. And it's good for Kofi, who put in the work. He's been around for a long time. Probably should have got a shot for the title a long time before this, but finally got it and came through with the win. So those are my two. A tie.
And I was in attendance for that one. And I will say too, this is a conversation I've had with other people on this show too. What you hope that becomes is just like, all right, we're getting more towards not needing to do, this is the first time this has happened. This is the first time this has happened. This is that it just becomes what's happening, because it's nice when you know, but like even when, women main evented WrestleMania for the first time, it's like, well, took you 35 years. Like, do you want to really, put yourself over for that? Because that's a long time. Like,
right.
34 WrestleManias without a women's main event too. So, on the lightest note of possible, Nick, your favorite Mania celebrity.
Ooh.
This might get me a little bit of heat, but I'm going to say when Floyd Mayweather was at WrestleMania, just because it was such a wild like crossover between, now that kind of stuff is very commonplace, obviously, especially in boxing, MMA, wrestling, all that kind of stuff crosses over a lot. But I think when Floyd was there and against the Big Show, I was just like, wow, this is actually happening in a way that some other celebrity appearances at WrestleMania up to that point had not kind of affected me the same way. So I think I'm going to go with that.
I'm going to throw out real quick before I go over to Vaughn to wrap it up. But my favorite is probably Bob Uecker. His contributions in 3 and 4. He was actually very good on commentary. And even when he came back for the Hall of Fame, his Hall of Fame speech was really good too. But with an honorable mention to WrestleMania 2, which had some of the most random celebrities ever.
So many. They were like bell ringers, timekeepers, like referees. They were everywhere. They were selling popcorn.
They had two different fast food commercial people in two different cities. They had Herb from the Burger King commercial in New York, and they had Clara Peller, the Where's the Beef lady, from Wendy's, as the timekeeper in Chicago. Like, how did they get Burger King? Did something just fall through with Ronald McDonald not being able to come to Los Angeles that day? Like, he couldn't hit all.
Maybe that was the plan, and Ronald McDonald was booked somewhere else.
I mean, G. Gordon Liddy from Watergate, Daryl Dawkins from the Nets, like Joan Rivers.
They were like soap opera celebrities on that show. It was so many. It
Susan
was
ridiculous. St. James on commentary in New York. That's what it was. Kathy Lee Crosby on commentary in Chicago. Elvira in L.A. Robert Conrad refereeing the main event and doing absolutely nothing. it's a real fun, endless treasure trove to see, like, some of the Cap Calloway, the Heidi High guy, was the timekeeper in New York. All right, so top that. Your favorite
celebrity. There's no topping that. WrestleMania 2 was just outrageous with the amount of celebrities and the random jobs they gave them during the show. I would have went Floyd Mayweather as well because the match was great. I thought the usage of him was great, but I'll go with a different one. I'll go with Johnny Knoxville at WrestleMania a couple years ago because as absurd as that match was, it was actually good. It was actually good. And also, let's give a nod to Snoop Dogg for last year for just somehow jumping in and saving the match. Like, come on, bro. That's why he's a WWE Hall of Famer. He knew what he was doing. Okay? Kid can work.
How have we had twice in WWE major show history, three different McMahon quads blown on pay-per-view, both of Vince's and Hunter and Shane's, and then on a Raw you had Hunter's.
So those McMahon quads, man, not good.
Three of those people, Hunter's not actually a blood relative, but between three members of that immediate family, four of their quads blown on live television. Who knew?
Maybe you should skip leg day every once in a while. Just a warning to everybody out there. Just some food for thought.
Fun facts. Well, it's been a really unique year for the build to WrestleMania. There's been so much news going on around the company of TKO and WWE. We can't really predict that, but we can do our best to predict what's going to happen with the card and the show and what's going on while still taking a serious look at, you know, what's going on in the news regarding Vince McMahon and all the misconduct things against him. And we'll always keep our eyes on that too, but it is WrestleMania season. So we can relive some of the fun that we've had enjoying the product over the years while still, taking ourselves seriously news wise too. So Nick Tilwalk, Vaughn Johnson, very fun to do this once again. Look forward to many more of these in the future, and happy WrestleMania.
Same to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.